Chapter 20. Breakfast in Manila.
"You may call me Lady Alice," the strange little woman told them when she climbed drowsily from her blankets at sunrise, stifling yawns with a fist. Apparently, she was unused to sleeping on the ground. Lan was certain she had been awake every time he took a turn at guard. People breathed differently awake and asleep. Well, women who wore silks seldom encountered hardships or discomfort. He doubted the name as much as he did the great serpent ring she produced, especially after she tucked it back into her belt pouch and said no one must know she was Aes Sedai, not even other sisters. True, Aes Sedai often pretended to be ordinary women and carried it off with those who did not know a sister's face, and true, once he had encountered an Aes Sedai who had not yet attained the ageless look, but one and all they practiced serenity to a fault. Oh, they got angry, but it was a cold anger. He had seen Alice's face in the moonlight when the water stopped, though he had not realized what he was seeing till later. Childish glee at playing a prank, and childish disappointment that it had not worked as she wished. Aes Sedai were many things, and convoluted enough with it to make other women seem simple, but they were never childish. When they had first seen her behind them, outpacing the merchant trains in the shield of their guards, Bukama offered a reason for a woman alone to follow three men. If six swordsmen could not kill a man in daylight, perhaps one woman could in darkness. Bukama had not mentioned Idain, of course. In truth, it plainly could not be that, or he would be dead now. Yet Idain might set a woman to watch him, thinking he would be less on his guard. Only a fool believed women less dangerous than men, but women often seemed to think men fools when it came to women. In the night, despite his earlier misgivings, Bukama had expressed displeasure at Lan's refusal to make proper pledge to her, though his own pledge sufficed to tie them to this Lady Alice, to Chachin. Besides, she had given them money. The woman did not know insult when she offered it. This morning, he grumbled while saddling his black gelding, a horse he claimed was not a patch on Sunlance. That was going some even for Bukama. The black was a fine animal with excellent conformation and a good turn of speed, if untrained as a warhorse yet.
"Aes Sedai are not. A decent man follows certain forms," he muttered as he tightened his front saddle girth. "It's a matter of common decency."
"Give over, Bukama," Lan told him quietly. Bukama did not, of course.
"It's disrespectful to her, Lan, and shameful on your part. An honorable man protects whoever needs protecting, but children above all, and women above men. Pledge her protection for your own honor."
Lan sighed. Likely Bukama would keep this up the whole way to Chachin. He should understand. If the woman really was Aes Sedai, Lan wanted no more strings binding him to her. Bukama already had tied one, but his own pledge might lead to worse. If she was Aes Sedai, she might be hunting a warder. If. Rhine only waited for the woman to finish brushing out her hair, which she did seated on her saddle on the ground, before offering her a flourishing bow that set his bells chiming.
"A beautiful morning, my lady," he murmured, "though no sunrise could compare in beauty with the deep dark pools of your eyes."
And then he twitched, his own eyes going wide as he searched to see whether she was offended.
May I settle your mare, my lady?"
As diffident as a scullion in the withdrawing room.
"Why, thank you,"
she said, smiling. A very warm smile.
"A gracious offer, Rhine."
She went with him to saddle her bay, or rather to flirt, as it seemed. She stood very close while he worked, looking up at him with those big eyes he so admired, and whatever she said, Lan heard answering murmurs about her skin of silky snow, which brought a delighted laugh from her. Lan shook his head. He understood what drew Rhine. The woman's face was beautiful, and however childishly she behaved, the slim body inside that blue silk belonged to no child. But Rhine was right. He had seen a Kyrianin in her skin, more than one, and they had all tried to mesh him in a scheme or two or three. Over one particularly memorable 10 days in the south of Kyrian, he had almost been killed 6 times and nearly married twice. An Aes Sedai, if she really was one, and a Kyrianin? There could be no worse combination.
Strangely, she made no complaint about riding on without a bite of breakfast, but when they reached Manala, a considerable village less than an hour along the road, she commanded a halt. And it was a command.
"Hot food now will make the day's ride easier," she said firmly, sitting very straight in her saddle and staring a challenge at them.
That was certainly like an Aes Sedai, but then it was like most women.
"I wish to reach Chachan as swiftly as possible, and I will not have you falling over from hunger in a foolish attempt to show me how tough you are."
Only Ryan met her gaze directly, with an uneasy smile. The man needed to decide whether he was besotted or afraid.
"It was our plan to stop briefly for food, m'lady," Bukama said, lowering his eyes respectfully.
He did not add that they would have eaten there last night, and slept in beds if not for her. Had she followed them to Manala, it would have meant nothing. Following Lan into the forest meant she had some interest in them or their plans. A sprawling collection of stone houses, roofed in red or green tiles, Manala was not far short of being called a town, with above 20 streets crisscrossing a pair of low hills. Three inns fronted a large green in the hollow between the hills, alongside the road. There, the men of two large merchant trains headed east were reluctantly hitching their horses under the watchful eye of the mounted merchants. A train of some 30 or so wagons was already lumbering away to the west, with some of the outriding guards looking over their shoulders instead of keeping watch as they should. The Beltane festivities were underway in Manala. They had not come to the games of skill and strength and speed yet, but newly married men and women were formally dancing the spring pole in the center of the green, feet flashing but bodies rigidly upright as they entwined the two-span tall pole in long brightly dyed linen ribbons, while older and unmarried adults were dancing in more lively fashion, to the music of fiddles and flutes and drums in half a dozen sizes. Everyone wore their feast day best, the women's pale blouses and wide trousers and the men's bright coats encrusted with elaborate embroidery. They crowded the wide open space, yet they were not the whole population of Manala. A steady trickle flowed up the hills, men and women bound on some errand, and a steady trickle flowed back down, often carrying dishes of food to the long tables set out on the far side. It was a merry sight. Laughing children, their faces smeared with honey often as not, ran and played through it all, some of the older ones occasionally feeding the small Beltane fires at the corners of the green. Lan was not sure how many really believed that leaping those low flames would burn away any bad luck accumulated since the previous Beltane, but he did believe in luck. Both kinds. In the Blight, you lived or died by luck as often as by skill or lack of it. In stark counterpoint to the merriment on the green, beside the road stood six stakes, holding the large heads of trollocs, wolf-snouted, ram-horned, eagle-beaked, below all too human eyes. They looked no more than 2 or 3 days old, although the weather was still cool enough to retard decay, too cool for flies. These were the reasons each of those dancing men wore a sword, and the women carried long knives at their belts. He smelled no charred wood, though, so it had been a small raid and unsuccessful. Lady Alice stopped her mare beside the stakes and stared at them. Not in amazement or fear or disgust. Her face was a perfect mask of calm. For an instant, he could almost believe she truly was Aes Sedai.
"I should have hated to face these creatures armed with only a sword," she murmured. "I cannot imagine the courage needed to do that."
"You have faced trollocs?"
Lan asked in surprise. Ryan and Bukama exchanged startled looks.
"Yes."
She grimaced faintly, as if the word had slipped out before thought.
"Where, if I may ask?" he said.
Few southerners had ever seen a trolloc. Some called them tales to frighten children. Alice eyed him coolly, very coolly.
"Shadowspawn can be found in places you never dream of, Master Lan. Choose us an inn, Ryan," she added with a smile.
The woman actually believed she was in charge. From the way Ryan jumped to obey, so did he. The Plowman's Blade was two stories of red-roofed stone with arrow slits rather than windows on the ground floor, and a two-handed sword of the sort farmers carried on their plows hanging point down above a door of heavy planks. This near the Blight, inns served as strong points against a trolloc attack, and so did many houses. The innkeeper, a stout graying woman, her billowing blouse worked with red and yellow flowers and her wide trousers covered in red and blue, came from the green when she saw them tying their horses to the hitching rings set in front of the inn. Mistress Tomichi looked uneasy about two Malkieri stopping at her inn, but she brightened when Alice began issuing commands for her breakfast.
"As you say, my lady," the round-faced innkeeper murmured, giving Alice a deep curtsy.
The Kyrianin had given no name, but her manner and dress did suggest a lady.
"And will you want rooms for yourself and your retainers?"
"Thank you, no," Alice replied. "I intend to ride on soon."
Rhine showed no offense at being called a retainer, accepting the word as easily as Alice did. But Bukama's perpetual scowl darkened. He said nothing, of course, not here, and perhaps would not ever, given his pledge. Lan decided he would have a few quiet words with Alice when he had the chance. There was a limit to how many insults a man could swallow in silence. He and the other men ordered dark bread and strong tea and bowls of porridge with slivers of ham in it. Alice did not invite them to share her table in the large common room, so they took benches at another. There were plenty to choose from, given that they were alone except for Mistress Tomichi, who served them with her own hands, explaining that she did not want to pull anyone from the festivities. Indeed, once she had taken payment, she returned to them herself. Taking advantage of their privacy, Lan and the others discussed the diminutive woman who had attached herself to them. Or rather, they argued about her, in low voices so as not to be overheard. Utterly convinced that Alice was Aes Sedai, Rhine recommended asking no questions. Questions could be dangerous with Aes Sedai, and you might not like the answers. Bukama maintained that they needed to know what she wanted with them, especially if she were Aes Sedai. Tangling in some unknown Aes Sedai scheme could be hazardous. A man could acquire enemies without knowing it, or be sacrificed without warning to further her plans. Lan forbore mentioning that it was Bukama who had placed their feet in that snare. He himself just could not believe she was a sister. He thought her a wilder placed to watch him by Idaine, though he did not mention her name, of course. Idaine likely had eyes and ears the breadth of the borderlands. It did seem an unlikely coincidence that she would happen to have a wilder waiting for him in Canluum, but there had been those six men, and he could not think of anyone else who might have sent them.
"I still say," Bukama began, then bit off an oath. "Where did she go?"
Alice's bowl sat empty on the table where she had been sitting, but there was no sign of the woman herself. Lan's eyebrows rose in admiration in spite of himself. He had not heard a sound of her leaving. Scraping his bench back noisily, Rhine rushed to one of the arrow slits and peered out.
"Her horse is still there. Maybe she's just visiting the privy."
Lan winced inwardly at the crudity. There were matters one spoke of and matters one did not. Rhine fingered one of his braids, then gave it a hard tug that made its bells jingle.
"I say we leave her silver and go before she comes back."
"Go if you wish," Lan said, rising. "Bukama pledged to her, and I'll honor his pledge." "Better if you honor your own," Bukama grumbled.
Rhine grimaced and gave his braid another hard pull.
"If you stay, I stay."
Perhaps the woman had just gone out for a glimpse of the festivities. Telling Bukama to remain in case she returned, Lan took Rhine out to see. She was nowhere among the dancers or the onlookers, though. In her silks, she would have stood out among all that embroidered linen and wool. Some of the women asked them to dance, and Rhine smiled at the prettier ones. The man would stop to smile at a pretty face if a dozen Trollocs were charging him, but Lan sent him off to look among the houses on the southern hill, while he climbed the one behind the plowman's blade. He did not want Alice meeting someone behind his back, perhaps arranging some surprise for later in the day. Just because the woman had not tried to kill him did not mean Idaine wanted him alive. He found her in a nearly empty street halfway up the hill, receiving the curtsy of a lean young woman whose blouse and wide trousers were embroidered in red and gold patterns, as intricate as those on Alice's riding dress. Kandori were as bad as Southerners when it came to embroidery. Stepping softly, he closed to listening distance of Alice's back and stopped.
"There's some Saharas live three streets that way, my lady," the lean woman said with a gesture. "And I think there's some live on South Hill. But I don't know if any are named Avina." "You have been a great help, Mistress Marishna," Alice said warmly. "Thank you."
Accepting another curtsy, she stood watching the other woman walk on uphill. Once Mistress Marishna was beyond earshot, she spoke again, and her voice was anything but warm.
"Shall I show you how eavesdropping is punished in the White Tower, Master Lan?"
He very nearly blinked. First she managed to leave the common without him hearing, and now she heard him when he was trying to be quiet. Remarkable. Perhaps she was Aes Sedai. Which meant she might be looking at Rhine for a warder.
"I think not," he told the back of her head. "We have business in Chachin that cannot wait. Perhaps your search will go more quickly if we help you find this Avena Sahara."
She turned very quickly and peered up at him, straining for height. He thought she might be up on her toes. No, she was no Aes Sedai, despite the icy look of command on her face. He had seen shorter Aes Sedai dominate rooms full of men who had no idea who they were, and without any straining.
"Better for you to forget hearing that name," she said coldly. "It is unwise to meddle in the affairs of Aes Sedai. You may leave me now, but I expect to find you ready to go on when I am done. If, that is, Malkyrie keep their word as I have been told they do."
With that insult, she stalked off in the direction the lean woman had pointed. Light, the woman had a tongue like a knife. When he returned to the plowman's blade and told Bukama what he had learned, the elder man brightened. Well, his scowl lessened a little. For him, that was as good as a grin from anyone else.
"Maybe all she wants from us is protection until she finds this woman." "That doesn't explain why she followed us for a whole day," Lan said, dropping onto the bench in front of his breakfast bowl. He might as well finish the porridge. "And don't suggest she was afraid to approach us. I think that woman frightens as easily as you do."
Bukama had no answer for that.